Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Certain foods remind me of a very specific time in my life. And one of those foods are the cupcakes from a little bakery in New York called Magnolia.
Yum.
They were so good. But they were featured on Sex and the City, maybe, or on some show, and then they just blew up in popularity. I lived not too far from there in my earlier time, in my 20s. And after they became popular, there were lines around the corner for Magnolia. And I associate it with a very specific time in New York. It was a fun time in my life, but I remember being so giddy to get those cupcakes. And there was something fun even about standing in the line, because you knew you were in a line with like people who shared this thing with you, this thing that you really loved.
Pre-social media too.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that it was able to take off. I guess that happens a lot more now with social media, because people say, oh, go to this place or whatever. But it was...
Yeah, it was like a viral hit before there were viral hits.
It was a thing before there were so many things. Now things are more common, I think. But
you know what I want right now?
A cupcake.
Yes.
But you know what? I actually prefer the ones you make at home, the like Duncan Hines, the... What?
Agree to disagree.
Oh, really? You
those are great. Those are great too. But
so for me, my one complaint with Magnolia is the icing was too sweet. I used to have to cut the icing in like half. Anyway, chew on that.
So to speak.
Yeah, I wish now I want to. You don't both want to have Magnolia cupcakes.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I am your now slightly hungry host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart.
And with me, as always, is my sweet teeth. How do you describe someone with more than one? No, you can't have sweet teeth. It's a sweet tooth.
No, people with a sweet tooth aren't people who just have one tooth.
I know. That was really dumb. Should we start over?
No.
You love this. You prefer Magnolia cupcakes to...
I think it was a much, much higher quality cupcake than a...
With a cake itself.
Than like a boxed. I love those boxed. Don't get me wrong. Those boxed Duncan Hines. The vanilla with the chocolate top.
The best, I think.
Of the four permutations, vanilla...
Permutations.
Vanilla cake, vanilla frosting, chocolate frosting. What is your favorite combination?
Good question. Well, with Magnolia, it was vanilla.
Really?
Yeah, but with the box ones, it's vanilla chocolate. But I also, you know, the Magnolia one I liked was the red. I got really into the red velvet chocolate, the one with the like slightly cream cheese. And I don't like cream cheese, but that cream cheese.
You ate a lot of those. You know, it really is.
I ate a lot of those.
It continues to astonish me that you're 150 pounds.
I ate them after eating like crappy like General Tso's chicken from...
And beers and...
Oh, so many beers.
I don't know how you did it. You must have the world's fastest metabolism.
So many beers. I know. I look at some of those... And the interesting thing about an actor, myself, is that I can see myself now in like existing in states of my life, you know, sometimes I'll watch a movie will be on and I'll be like, God, I remember clearly... Eating crap during that time and like drinking a lot.
And yet I was so handsome.
Not handsome, just like thin.
You're still thin.
I'm still thin.
You're
just
a little softer. Why are we talking about Magnolia cupcakes?
And my muffin top. Because our guest today, well, I'm glad you asked. She was heavily featured. It really is her soundtrack in the acclaimed Paul Thomas Anderson movie, Magnolia. Our guest today is the incredibly talented, one of my favorite musicians, Amy Mann. Mann, I said her name properly, I think.
You yelled it.
Well, I yelled it because I'm excited, but I held the N because she has two N's in Mann.
You didn't hold the E's in Amy.
That's true. I should have. Amy Mann. She is great. I've been listening to her since I was in high school. I think I discovered she was in a band called Till Tuesday in the 80s, and I think I discovered them in high school, but I became such a fan of hers from that. And then, of course, she did the soundtrack for Magnolia, and then she did a great solo album. She has an incredible solo career, and she's got a new album out, so we're going to talk about that. And
if anyone hasn't seen Magnolia, you should definitely see it. It took me a long... I was, like, really late
Oh, you were? Party.
Well, you showed it to me. Remember? It
was recently.
A couple years ago.
I know. But recently, you know, in relation to how long it's been out.
Yeah. I couldn't believe how long it took me, like 18 years to watch that movie. And
wow.
It
yeah.
did not disappoint. It's incredible, as is the soundtrack. I feel like they're equally incredible.
Oh, man.
So definitely.
Oh, man. I say that a lot.
So definitely check out that movie.
Yes.
Both for the movie and the music in it.
It's one of Philip Seymour Hoffman's best performances because he's so different. People think of him as like, you know, such a oddball character, chameleon actor. But in this, he is like the embodiment of empathy and compassion. He is such a... It's such a beautiful, compassionate performance character.
And Jason Robards' last.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Last film.
Yeah. And Tom Cruise is incredible.
Oh, my
obviously.
God. The whole movie.
Oh, it's man. Like, it is special.
I think it's one of the best.
Yeah. It's so good. I want to watch it now. But so much of that movie is her incredible soundtrack. And so she wrote a lot of original songs for it. She talks about how some of those songs were. How Paul Thomas Anderson discovered her and not discovered her, but decided to have her do that. And I was so curious because, again, it was just such an indelible movie for me.
And you had never met her, correct?
No, I never met her. We also talk about Big Lebowski. She's one of the characters in Big Lebowski, another favorite of the world's. And so she's somebody I'd always been so curious about. So I was so excited to do this. And I hope you're excited to listen to me do it. Good. I am too, to hear it again. Here it is. My meeting, my introduction to one of my favorites, the great Amy Mann.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, mm-hmm. This ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
Where are you, Amy?
I'm in my guest room. The guest room gets the good wallpaper.
Yeah, how nice. It's like a jungle. For our listeners, I'll describe. It looks like a canopy, like a foliage. Are those roses?
Hibiscus? You know what? I think they are hibiscus. Good eye. Good wallpaper and flower identification.
Well, that's the one thing I'm really good at. It's funny. I have a similarly ornate, like botanical wallpaper, and it always brings. I try to actually avoid it because I always end up spending, or people spend like the first couple of minutes of a Zoom
dissecting it and, you know, talking about it. And it's slightly embarrassing because it's so ornate. It's, I mean, it's not dissimilar to yours, which is so cool. And now I find myself.
Yeah, well, you know, it's nice to give the Zoom viewer a little something to look at.
I think
about the Zoom viewer. That's the your primary, yeah, you know, because if you do it in front of a bookcase, they're going to be distracted trying to figure out what books you have.
Or is it, I mean, was it set up deliberately to show off that you have, you know, taste in authors, like, you know, certain, you read Dostoevsky or whatever
it
is.
Yeah, my junk books are all in the basement.
Okay. Yeah, the romance
novels.
They get
hidden away.
Well, I'm so grateful to you for being on this because I've been such a fan of yours for so long. And what is your relationship with that? Like, how does that sit with you when somebody tells you they enjoy what you do?
I mean, it's obviously very nice, but also you never know exactly what to say. You know, you don't want to seem like you're trying to prolong the. Like,
I know,
really?
It can be indulgent.
Exactly. What about me do you enjoy the most?
Well, give me the top three songs. I discovered you through, and I wonder if other people, how many people have this experience where it was on, Till Tuesday was on a compilation of like 80s. I just went, you know, as a teenager, I was going through like a real 80s phase and it had just been the 80s. And that led me to all of your other songs, which I really, J for Jewels and all of them that I would listen to ad nauseum. I mean, it was one of those,
deep cuts.
Your albums, deep cuts. Yeah. Coming up. I promise myself I wouldn't sing any of them.
I think now you have to sing at least one line from each song that you mentioned. That's part of the, I mean, that's the cornerstone of your show, right? That.
That's what I do. I try to make people feel as uncomfortable as possible and by over complimenting them and then proving my fandom. But then of course Magnolia, I your work has been like you've been with me for decades now. Like you've been on regular rotation. So I've been hearing your voice and one
this
that
is very, very nice to hear. Thank you.
I'm glad I get to thank you for it because it's been, it truly has been like a wonderful part of my life. And, but what is that? I wonder what that is like, because as an actor, it's, you know, people see things or they, but you are, your art is constantly with, in my case, with people. It's a part of people's lives. Is it, was that an impetus that you had to do what you do now? I mean, did you set out with intentions like that, or is that too lofty and weird?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, when you're young, you just have like a vague idea of what anything means, really, you know, and, mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't one of those people who was born with a lot of musical talent. Like music was a real mystery to me. I couldn't, you know, I didn't have like a great ear. I couldn't sort of figure out how to play songs on the guitar.
Really?
Yeah, you know, like I needed instruction. But I mean, I just think some people are more of a slow burn and they kind of need a structure to, you know, like once I went to this music school called Berklee College of Music.
Yeah. Berklee, yeah.
And I went to like a summer session first because honestly, I literally knew so little about music that I would never have been accepted to that school. But in the summer session, I worked so hard that, you know, that then they accept me into the regular school.
Well, Amy, was it that you were just so drawn to music? I mean, you loved to listen to it and therefore you wanted to participate in it on a different level?
I wasn't kind of an overarching fan of everything. There would be a handful of things that I really, you know, I'm one of those people who finds one song and then plays it over and over and over. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I
too.
Knew that it, I knew that music kind of got to me in a particular way. And I just had an idea that I was a big believer in learning. And I had an idea that if I learned about music, maybe then I would know if I had any talent, like if I took some lessons and, you know, that would maybe help sort of unlock something. And, you know, and I think it did. Like,
Obviously, yeah.
You know,
sure.
But learning about music theory gave me a structure that then I could be creative on top of.
Oh, okay. And so was it also that you had things to say? I mean, as a teenager, let's say, is that when it really started in your teenage years that you got serious about it, that you were really drawn to it?
Yeah. I had tried to write songs, you know, before I went to Berkeley, I had tried to write songs and they were just terrible. I mean, I think, you know, music is interesting because like every teenager has something to say, but I was the kind of teenager who didn't even know what it was. Like, you know, that my personality was so about just trying to cover up who I really was. But then I think like music kind of gives you an outlet to write about things that you relate to the subtext, but the text is not necessarily exact. So you can be revealing, but also not like show your entire hand.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. It's almost, I think acting is similar. I mean, there's a character element to it that you can tell a story, the subtext of which, like you said, is very relatable. That's why I like Taylor Swift songs. I listen to a lot of, I love female artists, I think, for that reason. I don't always relate to the female perspective or experience, but the truth in it, I do. And I found that about, you know, that definitely applies to your music. I felt that as a teenager. I think that's why I fell in love with music as a teenager. Because those songs would speak to a truth that I could
relate. Yeah, and sometimes you don't even know that you feel a certain thing until you're listening to something. And music really is, you know, has a weird kind of magic where you feel like it makes you feel something. And then you're I didn't even know I was sad in that way, or I didn't even know,
Yes. That I had a long lost love that I could tap in, or love the idea, these ideas that you hear about, and then you start applying them to real world. You start falling in love. You start meeting people. You start seeing the world differently. Yeah, I that's another thing I love about your music and music in general is that I can then rediscover songs through new experiences, through the wisdom of age. You know, falling in love, it colors all the song, a lot of those love songs that I always enjoyed, but now that speak to a real truth, that speak to a reality.
And I think that if there's songs that are written, they're written like where people are really writing from their own truth or their own experience or their own, you know, like actual feelings and not just trying to kind of construct a song that would be a hit. I remember being a kid and listening to certain things and just like having it hint at this grown-up world that, you know, like there was a Rod Stewart song called Maggie May
Wake Up Maggie.
It's like his relationship with an older woman and it's just like, what is this world that you are like, he runs off with this woman you know, like he has to leave school and like, what is happening? There's just a lot going on.
Or Lola. I mean, I remember hearing the Kinks song Lola or any David Bowie song. Good God, what a world. Because I grew up in a very like provincial suburban town, you know? And so this was a way to experience the world that was opening up to me and dangerous and like sexual and all these things that I had not grown up with. Who were the people that really unlocked that for you? I mean, who were the groups, the bands? Was it Joni? Was it the Bob Dylans and Joni Mitchells?
I didn't really hear much Joni Mitchell, so I wasn't exposed to her stuff. Dylan and Bruce Springsteen later, and Beatles and early Elton John. I mean, I loved Elton John. There was just something about, you know, I mean, he's got, his melodic sense is so incredible. You know, the Bernie Taupin lyrics, like always, you know, there's always some weird story. There's like always some like,
I know,
always like, what is happening? What is this relationship? What is this scenario? You know, really interesting for a kid to listen to, like, and try to figure out what's going on.
Right. There's a line in Goodbye Yellow Brick Road that I only recently, all the times I've heard that song, and now, of course, I'm going to forget it, but Sarah Bareilles did a cover, and it made it so clear. I mean, sometimes you hear, like, well, I'd love to talk to you about covers, because you've done some of my favorites. You mentioned the Beatles. But there are certain lines, there are certain lyrics that are more clearly, amplified. Yeah. The dogs are beginning to growl.
Oh, yeah, dogs of society howl. Yeah,
society howl. Yeah, hedge. Yeah, but you hear them again, and when somebody else sings them, you hear them a little bit more clearly. But yeah, God, those lyrics. So that was one of the was it that music that then inspired you to want to write your own? Or is that oversimplifying it?
I think it's oversimplifying it. I mean, I think my desire to learn about music and want to be a musician and want to sing and write songs was a very vague leaning in a very vague direction. And I honestly, you know, like, it wasn't this sort of burning thing where, I just had like, I mean, it was a very vague feeling. Like, I have a feeling that I could be a musician. It is based on absolutely nothing. Like, there is no
That's
evidence.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. There's no evidence at all.
But what self-belief? Did you have that about other things in life? Or was this an anomaly? Was it just like, or did this apply to other areas of your life? Where like you were like, I think I could do this for some reason.
It's
without evidence.
Yeah, I mean, kind of an anomaly, but I think that is... I don't know. Like, I think that I think that's a workaround that my brain does. That, and I have this when I'm writing songs, where I will have a feeling that there's a better line, or a feeling that there's a rhyme out there, or like a figure of speech that will finish off this line perfectly. And I don't know, I don't know what it is, but I have a feeling. It's just like this vague feeling that it exists, and then I'm usually right, but like it's like not based on any evidence. It's just something churning around in my brain that, like, is picking up some kind of information. And
and do you have any sense then, when you do put it to music, do you have any sense of what will be received by more people, like of what might be a more successful in that sense, like a more popular
song? No idea.
Song.
No idea.
No.
Because I can hear my stuff objectively as if it were somebody else's, but it's always my ear. And I don't think my taste is necessarily a populist taste. You know, like, I don't think that I mean, you could play me 20 songs and I wouldn't necessarily be able to pick out the one that was going to be the big hit. Yeah,
really?
I think my taste is probably just a little left of center. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, specifically with Till Tuesday, a song like Voices Carry, which was my introduction to Till Tuesday, and one that you often see on like compilations and stuff. But I remember when I started then listening to Till Tuesday's other songs, I couldn't really discern why one should be a hit over the others. To me, they were all, so many of them were great and infectious. And, you know, I would listen to them, like I said, constantly. And to the point where Voices Carry was maybe even further down on the listening rotation. So was that a surprise to you, that one?
It was a huge surprise. It was a huge surprise.
Yeah,
it was a bit of an anomaly, because we were doing kind of like post-new wavy funk. Mm-hmm. That was more our thing, because we were more listening to R&B bands like the Gap Band or Chic. So that was more our influence. Yeah. Not that I could sing like that. Like, the vocal was definitely this sort of punky vocal on top of that bed of music. But so Voices Carry was kind of an anomaly for us. At that point, and we had people coming up to us after shows saying, picking out that song, and that was not a song I would have ever, I mean,
really?
I just, who knows how something hits somebody? It just, you know, I couldn't really tell.
Yeah. So, but what was it like when that did then become it? Did it ever feel like it had gotten away from you when something does become that successful? When you have, let's say, a hit, what is that experience like as an artist, as somebody who is, you know, like you said, you have no discernible way of knowing that that should, you have no connection to that, that song as being special. What is it like then to have that become the popular one or a popular one?
I mean, as far as the song goes, that was, you know, I mean, that was fine. Like I liked it. It wasn't that I had any objection to it. I think more just the, you know, we were one of the first bands to really be pushed by MTV. MTV was like very, very new. And so we became very visible really quickly. And, you know, and our, you know, fame didn't last that long, but when it did, it was way out of proportion to how much, like we were completely poor. Like we were not making any money. You know, didn't get any money from the record company. Yeah.
Yeah. Really?
So, you know, we were living on like $150 a week.
Oh yeah. My God. Even after being played regularly on MTV having notoriety.
Yeah, so we were living in these dumpy apartments and, you know, but people were following us home. So it was like a real disconnect.
Oh,
yeah.
I'll say, how did that change? How did you then monetize that success?
I mean, you know, we didn't. It's like I think it's only been like just right now, Sony Records has sort of a debt forgiveness thing for artists that are, you know, put out records like 35 years ago. And so that record is now entered into debt forgiveness. We have not made money until...
Oh my God. Like
the first amount of money. I think we made like $10,000. Like this. Yeah, that's it.
Crazy.
No, I know, it's totally crazy. Because it's like the deals are structured so terribly and money goes to other people first, and they, you know, they have like these clauses for breakage, and you know, like then your CD rate was like half the rate of an album, or you know, it's like just it's like these terrible deals. Well, no, we never made any money from that, and it was not an expensive record. It wasn't like we made a couple of very inexpensive videos. We did not take any tour support because our dumb managers at the time were like, we don't want to get too much in debt. Like, well, so we just had to drive ourselves around in a van, you know, on these. Yeah, it was crazy.
That is, because I know, just having been on the movie making side, how expensive a lot of, like a song like, you know, even J for Jewels, a song like that would be, I would imagine, really pricey. But I guess it's Sony who makes the money. I mean, it's as simple as that. Those songs have to be expensive to license.
Yeah, I mean, we retained most of our publishing. So we do, if somebody licenses a song, like we do get money from that. But like from the sale of the record, we never got anything.
That's wild. Was that part of the impetus for going solo a few years later and knowing what you, having a better understanding of the business, did you take that into account when you then went solo?
I went solo mostly because the keyboard player had left right before we made the third record. And then the guitar player left after we made the third record, because I think the songs I was writing were just so stylistically different and it wasn't really his thing anymore. So, you know, just kind of by default, I ended up as a solo artist.
Christian, my brother, co-host, recently bought, or is on the verge of buying, I don't want to jinx it, his first home. To make it feel a little less daunting and confusing, he's been listening to How to Buy a Home podcast. Host David Sidoni has been helping first-time home buyers for years. His How to Buy a Home podcast can help you start making the steps toward home ownership. If that's something that you're interested in, if you're headed that way, David can help no matter if you've tried looking for a home or if you've been too overwhelmed to even start. He connects first-time home buyers all over the U.S. with great local realtors so they know they have someone in their corner. He answers questions like, when is the best time to start? How do I even start? Do I really need to put 20% down? And by the way, the answer is no. Most people only put 3.5% down. I would never have known that. That's something that David would have told you and will tell you when you listen to How to Buy a Home podcast. I'm telling you, if you're thinking about buying a home next month, next year, or in 5 years, listen to How to Buy a Home podcast today. This is your best bet to avoid being one of those horror stories and get an insider playbook with clear, no BS, real information.
Find How to Buy a Home wherever you listen to podcasts.
I was in a waiting room the other day, and I don't like waiting, and I really don't like waiting rooms. So I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll kill some time by taking my phone out and playing some Best Fiends, my favorite game. And wouldn't you know it, the time flew by, and it was my turn. It seemed like 30 seconds had gone by, but really about 10 minutes had passed, because that's how engaging Best Fiends is. It's a mobile puzzle game that anyone could download and play. It's the perfect puzzle game to lose yourself in because it's really fun. The game itself features tons of really adorable characters that help you solve thousands of fun puzzles. And the more you play, the more of these characters you collect. And the more you win, the more challenges you face. I'm only on episode 40. I say only because there are thousands of them. So I'm looking forward to a long future in advancing levels. It's just a really fun game to play when you have some time to kill. So download Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R. Best Fiends.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
Magnolia, I think that's also how a lot of people discovered you as a solo artist. Was that Paul Thomas Anderson reaching out? Was that what was that process like? Was writing specifically for a movie, or were those some of those songs like Wise Up? Had you written them prior to that, and they just applied? They seemed to make sense.
Wise Up was written for a movie called Jerry Maguire.
And then
Cameron Crowe didn't use it. And then, but like right after the movie came out, he's like, why didn't I use that song? And
That's funny.
Paul heard it and he was like, well, I'm going to use it, which is very funny.
Oh, man. Yeah. What about Save Me? Was that for, because they sing it in the song, in the movie.
So Save Me, well, we were friends, me and my husband, Michael Penn, we're very good friends with Paul. And Michael had scored his first movie, and he scored Boogie Nights, and he scored
he did Heart 8 as well,
which is a great movie.
Great movie. Yeah.
And so he had been working with Paul, and Paul was writing at the same time I was writing, and you know, Paul would come to the studio and hear what we were working on, and I would play him parts of songs that were unfinished. So it was very much like, you know, he would tell me what he was writing and what he was thinking, and that, you know, that he wanted a song that was, you know, said these kind of things. And it would kind of like a lot of just happy accidents, like where our writing was really intersecting thematically.
Yeah, I bet. And with Save Me specifically, he had to really commit to that. I mean, that must have been really inspiring to him, because he shot so much footage around.
Yeah,
him. Shot those actors.
I think so. So yeah, I think there was, you know, ideas that he got from listening to the music, and you know, he uses music in a really wonderful way. Like, I think he's got a very, you know, all the music choices in Boogie Nights are so great.
Oh, they're brilliant. And Michael, your husband, yeah, I mean, his work in that is he helped make it a classic. So you were just naturally around people in the movie world. I'm also curious about how you became involved in The Big Lebowski, another classic, another thing that I can't turn off when it's on, like your music. Did you happen to know the Coen brothers? Was that through another series of just knowing people?
That's funny, because that was sort of through Paul too, because his girlfriend at the time was one of the casting directors, and said, you know, we were just hanging around one day, and she said, you wouldn't be interested in auditioning for this movie, would you? And I'm like, why not? You know, I was kind of in a mood to like,
you said it the most nihilistic way.
Why not? And I was also very disillusioned with the music business. So I'm like, I literally would do anything that wasn't, you know, that wasn't dealing with the music business. So,
Interesting. That's interesting. So you had never harbored ambitions to act? That wasn't
I'm not very good either. So like I auditioned. I mean, I'll sort of audition for anything, because you know, who cares? Like, it's an interesting experience, even if you're terrible. But because the part called for, like,
that's how I feel about it. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. If you know, the part called for, like, I was speaking in German, which already like removes it from my, you know, like my own life. And I'm playing.
You don't speak German?
I mean, a little bit, you know, enough to be able to, yeah, enough to put, you know, read the words on the paper. Yeah.
Well, it's funny because the character also has to kind of act like they don't want to be there. There's got to be like an ambivalence. Yeah. The character's a little bit like just ambivalent about existing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So your own natural, I guess I'll try this. Might have really
my own natural lack of emotion was perfect.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. What were they like? You must have been a fan of them. Of the Coen brothers, was it just on that level? Was it like cool? Was it like a thrill?
It was very cool. And they were cool. I tell you what was really nice about it, and I'm sure you've had this experience, but, you know, I read the lines and then they looked at each other and they like started smiling. They were like that, like, and you could tell that they were you could tell that they felt, this is going to work.
Well, especially for them, they're so specific, you know, I mean, like, that's why a movie like that is so brilliant, because it's all so, it's structured so perfectly, but that script is so specific, and their shots and the casting. So they must have, that must feel extra good to have somebody like the Coen brothers and knowing that you're going to be a part of what will then probably become a classic.
Yeah, yeah, it's exactly. Like,
and you get to work with Peter Stormare, who I worked with Peter a little bit. I really loved him. He's a wild person.
Yeah, he was a wild person. And there was another German guy who was his first movie also. And so we got together because I had a feeling that there might be a call for. If we had to speak more German, I mean, obviously, like, I'm not speaking German extemporaneously.
You're not ad-libbing.
Flea is also in the scene. He doesn't speak German at all. Peter Stormare is Swedish, so he's not speaking German. So me and this guy got together and we were like, let's just figure out a dialogue. Like, we're having an argument about, did you remember to bring the key or did you lock the door? And so—
Oh, that's funny.
You know, sure enough, like, when the day came, we're sitting at this table at a diner, and they go, "All right, you guys are talking in German, and we'll just be fading in."
Thank God!
Like, oh my God! Can you imagine?
just faking it,
good. Yeah,
no,
did not want to be in that position. So I was really glad we had worked something out.
Oh man, how did that, how much did that change that era? I guess I'm talking about Magnolia specifically. How much did that change your career? I mean, did that noticeably change things? You performed at the Oscars. I know you left your label after that and went indie, but was that the result of any of the success of that movie? What was that period like?
Well, the record company stuff, I was on Geffen and a bunch of other labels were merging into Interscope. And so Interscope was suddenly inundated with, you know, 1,000 artists that they didn't know what to do with. And they actually said, they told me that I could leave if I wanted to. And I was like, praise Jesus.
It was a play breakup.
This is the move I've been waiting for. And
it's not you, it's us.
You know, and the soundtrack had been on Warner Brothers, and I think, you know, I think went gold. Like, it did really well. And that was like not enough, you know, for them to consider me a, you know, important
artist.
That's
crazy. Yeah. That's wild.
But I think that, you know, I noticed with the Magnolia is that, you know how it is. Like, people just take you seriously in a way, like, maybe they knew your name and maybe they liked you, but you just weren't like at the top of, you just weren't on their radar in the same way.
Right. It's like you've been vetted by the cool powers.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Which makes such a difference.
Yeah, it really does. And creatively too, then you're allowed to like grow and you're allowed to try things. And is that kind of what led into another great soundtrack? God, one of my favorites, Magnolia and I Am Sam. You got to play two of the best, two of us, and which I think you did with Mike, with your husband,
Michael
right?
Penn. Mm-hmm.
Oh, how great. Do you generally enjoy that, covering songs, or is the pressure?
It depends. The pressure is different. I'm not that good at it, you know, because that kind of goes back to, like, you know, being a kid.
I don't accept
I wasn't one of those people who sang, you know, like sang a lot of other people's songs. Like, it's just, I don't know. They're harder to remember because you didn't write them. Uh-huh. So you don't know. I remember my own lyrics. Well, very imperfectly. I often forget lyrics, mm-hmm. but the way I remember is that there's an emotional through line that makes sense to me. And I don't have that with other people's lyrics. So yeah,
uh-huh.
You just have to rely on memory, which is not very good.
And was that the case with The Scientist as well? Another great cover.
The Scientist was just so beautiful. Like, there was something that was really just heartbreaking about that song, right? And that was the mood I was in. So, yeah.
That makes sense. Because you leaned into the heartbreaking elements of it to the point where it's one of those rare examples of a song that I love that it was made better, I think. Your version is...
I
love Coldplay.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, but yours is just gut-wrench. I mean, it's like, you really do lean into that heartbreaking.
Yeah, their melodies, they just have so much feeling in their melodies, I have to say.
But it also allows your voice to really come to the forefront. I mean, it allows you have such a great voice for that tone that song elicits. And you've mentioned a couple times, you've made like self-deprecating remarks about your voice and about, I don't know if I could do this. At what point did you feel comfortable with doing it? I guess at what point did you accept that you had a beautiful voice, or have you?
I don't think I'm that great a singer, but thank you. I really don't. Well. I mean, I don't think I have a very strong voice. I think, you know, I crumble under pressure. There's never been a single television performance I've done that I, you know, sang in tune. Just because I get nervous and like, you
really?
Just, I can't, you know, I can't breathe right or something. I don't know what happens.
Really? Yeah. Even after all the performing, I mean, you've done so much live performing, it never got, how do you combat that? I mean, how do you then go on stage and do it with any confidence?
You know, because mostly I'm in front of my own audience. So I know that I can joke around or, you know, like stop a song or, you know, just... There's like a dick around factor that's fun and easy.
The dick around element. Yeah.
But you can't do that on TV. That. You know, I can't. Yeah.
You can't dick around as easily. That's true. Especially at the Oscars. My God, if you were triggered by that, by televised stuff, the Oscars must have been brutal.
That wasn't too bad. And I don't know why. I mean, I don't. That just seemed sort of smaller. I didn't really think about that there was a million people there. Or, you know, a million people watching, or however many millions.
Well, I think like a billion. Yeah. I mean, not to make you retroactively nervous.
And that was also the year that they decided to force the musicians to do a medley instead of, like, you didn't get to sing your whole song.
I sang
like 30 seconds of the song, and then Randy Newman like sang 30 minutes of his song. I'm sure he was really happy about it.
Really? Yeah. Well, that's funny. Well, you were probably genuinely happy about it. Like, okay, the less the better.
Get in and out. Yeah.
Get it over with. Yeah. You just said to this save and me. Your new album is called Queens the Summer Hotel. I'm not telling you. I'm guessing you already know that. If you don't, what a surprise.
That would be a cruel surprise.
Where does that title go? I can't wait, but where does that title come from? Queens of the Summer
Hotel. It comes from a poem from by Anne Sexton. And this record was written, started as a project that I was approached by producers to write music for a stage production that was based on the book Girl Interrupted. And so Girl Interrupted is a memoir written by Susanna Kaysen of her time in McLean Hospital, a psychiatric hospital in 1968. So, you know, I started reading the book and was like, boo, off and running, and just started writing a ton of songs.
Really?
And like sort of outstripped the book writing process. So, you know, that's kind of what led me to like, you know, make a record, because I had written so many songs. I was so into this project, but you know, they didn't want me to call it Girl Interrupted because, you know, there may be a cast album at some point, like who knows.
Yeah.
But and also, like, it, you know, at that point it sort of was, you know, felt like more, more personal. Exactly. And Anne Sexton had spent time at McLean also. So I took a line from her poem.
Oh, cool. Well, I don't want to, if this is something you can talk about, please feel free. I would love to know about it, but I don't want to diminish your experience by just asking about it casually. I read some wild stuff about your own upbringing, and I'm wondering if that's stuff that you've talked about your, as it relates to either this album or just in general, if you've spoken about what happened between your parents.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't have the greatest childhood.
Right.
Yeah, so my mother, it was like very convoluted. So when I was three, my mother ran off of somebody and they kidnapped me and kidnapped his children also because he was also married. And, so I was taken away from my father for about 9 months. And then when I, he finally found me and I was brought back and then I didn't see my mother again. So,
ever again. I mean, I saw her. England,
yeah, I saw her when I, was an adult. But
wow, at three you were. Do you have an incredible story? Do you have any recollection of it? Do you remember anything?
I do. I mean, I remember. We sort of traveled around Europe. I remember being in Amsterdam. I have these tiny little wooden shoes. I actually got. I mean, I know I'm making it sound fun, but it wasn't fun.
Sound bad.
I mean, he had a real temper. He was a very volatile person. Mm. He was not particularly nice. There was also an incident where I was hit by a car that he was driving. So there, there's sort of layers of like. Layers of trauma and stress and stuff. Yeah,
I bet. I'm sorry. And I'm glad your father was able to get you back. Did you have siblings at the time? Were your siblings involved?
I had a brother, and he was not taken. I think probably because he was older, but also like he was, I was very. I think I was already very. Passive in the face of, I was thinking about this the other night, when you're traumatized or when you're stressed, you have like fight or flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. And when you're three, you're not there's no fleeing.
There's no fighting. Yeah.
So like freezing is kind of all you can do. And I think my brother was just like much feistier and would not have been, he probably would have found a way to get in touch with my father or something.
Right, but at three too, I mean, what resources do you have? Especially back then, it's like, people forget, now of course you might have access to a cell phone or something. God, that is really harrowing. And were you able to then, you said you saw your mother then years later, was there any kind of reconciliation between you two?
Well, sort of. My brother had actually tracked her down. We were both in our mid-20s and so we saw her and we would see her every now and then. I mean, she didn't feel like a mother at that, like sort of an aunt, I guess, at that, like I didn't really have that feeling of, like that we were related necessarily or closely related. Like it's just too much time, you're that young.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And was her impetus once you became successful, does that inspire somebody to come out of the woodwork? Does that inspire somebody to want to be closer? Did you get that feeling from anybody else in your life? Like, because your success was quite sudden, I would imagine.
Yeah, I did. I never got that from my biological mother, I have to say.
Yeah.
She was a mess. I mean, she died a few years ago.
Yeah.
But, I think she remained kind of a mess of a person and didn't really know what to do with the feeling of guilt at having left her kids. Mm-hmm. And, she had two other children at that point. I just don't think she really, whatever her issues were, I don't think she really, ever worked those out.
Does that stuff inspire you? I mean, how much of pain like that, how much of your life do you draw from? I mean, when you create, when you write, I'm thinking about this new album in particular, Queens of the Summer Hotel, how much of that comes to the forefront?
For this, it was a really specific assignment. So like you try to, to stick to, you know, passage in the memoir or characters that are from the memoir or, you know, scenes that you think could maybe culminate in a song. But, you know, they're definitely at a point where I was kind of writing about, you know, some of my own experience or some, you know, experience of people I know. I, you know, I spent about 20 years ago, I spent some time in a treatment center. So, so that kind of group psychiatric setting was fairly familiar.
Oh, wow. Interesting. And is it something that you, how have you, and how do you process that stuff now? Like, where do you place it? Like, I'm just trying to, I'm imagining you being asked that question by me, and I'm, you know, I don't want to labor it or dwell on it, and we can cut out anything, but like, how does it live in you now, that stuff? Is it, does it have its place? Is it comfortable?
I think that when traumatic episodes happen when you are very young, it tends to become systemic. And so it's not, it's like, it's very hard to process. Like I, you know, it's hard to process stuff you can't really remember, you know, and then you're left with this vague feeling of dread or like a vague feeling of horror or,
I have that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do, actually. I really do. And it's stuff that like, sometimes it'll just come to me. It'll, I just had a therapy session right before this. And, you know, I put something together that that reminded me of a feeling. They're feelings, too, that are kind of nebulous, you know. But every once in a while, I'll connect a feeling, like an odd reaction to something or troubling reaction to something that, that I had as a child. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it's really... it's that's systemic. That's a good way
and
of putting it.
And this is, you know, I think also this is why I'm interested in songwriting, because the process of songwriting for me is very similar to, you know, the kind of therapeutic process or recovery process, because, you know, I have a piece of music, it makes me feel a feeling, and I and I try to put a story to it, right? And then that's like what recovery is all about.
Right. That's true. And is there anyone who does that for you, who speaks to you now? I mean, are there artists that you are following that 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 inspire you in that sense?
I don't know. I think it, you know, it's more individual songs. Like, I mean, honestly, like I've been the last couple of years, I've been on a big Steely Dan kick because I started to, I mean, I love Steely Dan. I think they're, you know, incredibly talented, really interesting chord changes and harmony and, you know, floating melodies on top of chord changes that are really kind of oddball. But their lyrics are really fantastic. And the more I listen to them, the more I go, man, something happened to these dudes. Like, you know what I mean? Like where you could just feel trauma underneath like an artist. Like that's how I kind of, I started to feel about them. Like something bad happened to these guys.
Interesting. God, you make me want to, I'm going to do that. I want to listen to them now. I want to listen for that now because I often don't, especially with melodies that are that great, like, you know, like songs that are, that just sound that great. I don't often dwell on the lyrics.
Their lyrics are really great. I mean, you know, not like not always tasteful, not always, you know, there's like a real cynicism, but there's also, I, you know, I mean, it sounds like trauma to me. That's all I can tell.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is.
That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
We have 15 minutes, I'm being told, yeah. Amy. So I'm gonna get to our lightning round, which is it's all about childhood trauma. No, I'm kidding. No, it's just kind of fun, quick questions. As you'll see with the first one, which is always embarrassing for me to ask, especially someone I really respect. What is your favorite emoji?
The tilting laughing guy.
Side a little bit, crying.
Yeah, he's laughing so hard he's crying. Yeah.
Yes. I like that you said that in a slightly morose way.
It gets used on a certain text thread a lot.
To create a tone, right? Yeah, okay. Who was your first celebrity crush?
Oh, the first one?
The one that made a real impact.
Elton John, probably. Unfortunately, never to be realized.
Unrequited crush. Unless maybe you could have, I don't know, helped him. Maybe it would have been a transition. What is your favorite ice cream flavor?
I like a mint chocolate chip. I know this is very controversial among certain people. Why? I have friends who were like, do not make ice cream into toothpaste. And, I'm like, no, these two flavors go together.
It's one of my favorites. I don't see any controversy in that. But now I'm going to be thinking of toothpaste when I eat it. So thank you for that. What is your, I only use chocolate toothpaste.
Yeah.
What is your favorite holiday?
Christmas is pretty solid. Look, I'm not going against the tide here.
No.
Christmas is pretty awesome.
Do you like to sing at Christmas time? Did you ever grow up in any sort of church or with Christmas music?
I spent some time a little bit at school, in choir, and I loved being a part of a chorus singing Christmas songs. That was the greatest.
Yeah. Oh God! Have you ever thought about releasing a Christmas album?
I have.
Album?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was like probably ten years.
Oh, you did.
Ago, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, then I need that. That shows my how I'm lacking now as a host. I apologize.
Now I want to shill the Christmas album.
Yes. I can't wait to pick it up. You're like, not only did I think about it, I thought about it 10 years ago, and I did it. What is an acclaimed movie that you're embarrassed to admit you haven't seen, or like maybe people shame?
Everything. I'm so bad at watching. I've never seen Pulp Fiction. That's right off the top. Right off the top. I mean, there's so many movies I haven't seen.
Is it because you don't watch a lot of? I just imagine you run in the circles of these great cinephiles. Is it because you watch more obscure movies or you just don't watch that many
movies? I don't watch a lot of movies. Also, I got to say, I'm one of those people who can't take a lot of violence. And I just feel like, I think that's like, if you have sort of a base layer of trauma, I just can't have my nervous system like ravaged for fun.
I get it. That's why I don't like those horror movies, those like torture porn movies, like Saw.
Oh, fuck that. Like, it's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, then don't watch Pulp Fiction. That's, what is a game show, past or present, that you would want to be a contestant on?
Match Game, obviously. Yeah, yes. The classic 70s game where with Nelson Riley, where everybody's drunk. I love him.
Yes,
I kind of have Charles Nelson Riley glasses on right now.
You do. Well, you know, there was the reboot of it that you could, I'm sure, be on. They would love to have you on.
That was the greatest.
Do you drink coffee or tea? And if so, how do you take it?
I drink a lot of, caffeine kind of makes me dizzy. Decaf almond latte.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. If you could learn another language, what would it be?
German.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, you're
which I've tried, which I try periodically to learn. If I'm going there, I try to brush up on it so I can say, hello or whatever.
The basics. Yeah. What is your favorite cereal?
I'm on a big muesli kick.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know why. No, it's
like a real treat. Yeah, it's a real treat.
Yeah, raw I can't wait for the morning.
So not exciting.
Really knock your socks off. Well, it especially if you say it in a German way, a very morose German delivery, it would make more
ich
sense.
Ich möchte müsli. Yeah, something like that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's good. That's good. She lost her toe. Now I just keep hearing she gave up her toe. If you had to choose a different first name, Amy. Amy's a great name, but especially you've really elongated the Amy. You're two E's, and what different first name would you choose?
I've always been partial to the name Dwight. It's not really necessarily appropriate for a lady, but
this is 2021.
Yeah, it's anything goes.
Anything goes. Dwight. Okay. Dwight. I like the way Vince Vaughn is very good friends with, this is name dropping, he's good friends with Dwight Yoakam. And whenever I hear the name Dwight, I can only hear Vince say it because he would always reference Dwight, and he would say Dwight. He would say D. He would separate the D from the white.
I mean, now Dwight. That you're saying it like that, I might have to change my answer.
Okay, change the answer. Okay. Dwight. Well, you know, Dwight's a great guy. If you had a sandwich named after you, I'm very proud to say that I up at a theater in Williamstown, I have a sandwich named after me. It's like a crowning achievement. What I could have asked this question without the bragging part of it, but what would be on your sandwich? What would be on the Amy Man, the Amy Manwich?
Turkey, avocado, bacon. I realize I'm not describing. I'm describing a club sandwich, basically. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
On
that's
gluten-free
right.
bread, though. There's the twist.
Okay. 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 That's the man twist. What is your favorite Tom Hanks movie?
I'll say Big.
Yeah. Great. Just talking about that yesterday with Zach Levi, whose name I kept mispronouncing, Levy. he was in a movie called Shazam, where he plays kind of like a grown-up child, and he said that movie was really influential. Would you rather take a time machine to the past or the future?
Oh, God, not the future, because where the earth will be on fire.
Well, yeah. Right. Okay, we might have to second.
Yeah, I'd go back into the past, like, I don't know, 1920, yeah. see what the boom was all about.
Yeah, before
yeah, before the crash. Pre-crash.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yeah, the depression. Are you more of a talker or a texter to communicate?
Oh, texter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Night or morning person?
Pretty morning-ish. Yeah. Not nighty anymore.
Yeah. Me too. Toilet roll over
Don't
or
care.
Under?
However, okay. However it happens.
It doesn't bother you either way. Okay. Okay. You want to finish this sentence?
It's like the Oscars. Just get it over with.
Yes. And then Randy Newman comes and uses the toilet paper right after you. Finish this sentence, if you would. Life is short, so.
It's because there's a lot of silence.
Yeah.
So do it now.
Yeah. Yes, good. I like that. Well, I'm glad I got to do this now. This
me
was
too.
Such a thrill for me. I really thank you for your work, and your voice has been such a wonderful part of my life.
Thank
so
you.
Long.
This was really nice. I've always thought you were such a lovely person. It's really nice to talk to you.
Oh, thanks, Amy. It means a lot. I will take that with me the rest of the week and smile a little bit more. Thank you. It means a lot. Thanks for doing this. And we're going to talk all about the album, and I can't wait
Fantastic.
To listen to it. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
So that just happened.
That just happened. Yeah. Oh, that's you not doing the impression?
Yeah, proudly. Proudly not doing an impression.
You stared at me with pride as you said that.
I stared you down.
Like, I remember.
I'm doing it neutrally. I can't even begin. Also because she has such a, I mean, it's such a great voice. I don't want to
You can't
like,
do her chill.
No.
You can't capture her chill.
No. No, she has a lot of chill.
She has like an NPR voice.
Yes, she does. She does.
But yeah, great voice and like an attitude that matches her chill voice. You know, it seems like a very chill person.
She does, despite, I mean, what she's gone through. I can't believe she was open about that.
Well, maybe as... Maybe in response to that.
Yeah.
Maybe she became a more chill, laid-back person in response to the harrowing childhood she had.
Right. That that everything maybe pales in comparison to that, is that she's been like, you know, if you set the bar there, if you in terms of your, you know, in terms of your exposure to like really intense traumatic human behavior, maybe everything else is just kind of like... Okay.
Or it's just a coping mechanism.
Maybe, yeah. Interesting, though. I would never have thought that about somebody like that. It's interesting that she then adopted that kind of, like we said, very chill general attitude.
Yeah. She seems very cool.
Very cool and like very, I don't think she was doing it for effect, but I don't know what I don't think I'm using the right term, but like really self-effacing, really self-deprecating about her. Doesn't self-deprecating imply that like there's an awareness of the behavior that like you're doing it to affect a certain reaction? Like if you say like I'm not talented or like I'm really not very good.
Oh, I see. I think you can be self-deprecating without being aware of being self-deprecating.
Okay. Well, then in that
I could be wrong.
If that is the case, then she was very, I thought, like inappropriately self. Not
what's the difference between self deprecating and self-effacing? Are they the same thing?
I think, I don't know. I think they're the same thing. I use them interchangeably.
Mm-hmm, I do too.
Maybe incorrectly.
You don't both have to use those two things interchangeably?
Self-effacing I always thought of as a little bit lighter, a little bit less.
Maybe.
You know, self-effacing is kind of like, oh, I'm not, like a less heavy version.
Well, you wouldn't, there are a couple moments in the interview where you wouldn't let her get away with being self-effacing, where she like she said at one point she doesn't consider herself a very good singer, and you were like, what? And then she said she doesn't think she's very good at covering songs, and I know like how much the I Am Sam soundtrack means to both of us and how brilliant she is at covering
like regular
those
rotation
songs. Oh, like one of my favorite things ever, and you were like, oh, what? You like almost got mad at her.
Yeah,
for being self-deprecating.
I was that emphatic.
You were incredulous, as you, I think, should have been.
Incredulous.
Because she, I think, has not only a beautiful voice, but she has a beautiful ability to cover.
I know.
Song. And that Coldplay song she covers.
Both of them.
You guys talked about that.
I mean, both
of them. Both of what?
I mean, I'm saying like two of us and the scientists are like, two of the best songs ever written. And like, obviously the Beatles version is incredible, as is the Coldplay version. But like, I think, and this is like the highest compliment to a cover, is that I really think like her versions of both are better.
Yeah. I mean, it's debatable.
It's of course.
But it's definitely like, in the running.
Yeah. I mean, as much as I love both those bands, I really do. Beatles and Coldplay, they're brilliant songs.
I would argue that Sarah Bareilles' Yellow Brick Road
I think so.
At least on par with
I think
John's.
So too. I think it might be better.
It's funny, her first crush, Elton John.
I know. That's funny. She was pretty quick to answer that too.
It's funny. I was going to say I like having musicians on the show, and I would like to have more musicians because I like musicians, but also I like the sensibilities they tend to have, you know, where they're not trying to. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love actors, and it's like really fun to have actors on the show. But
you're getting a little sick of hearing how they like got their first like.
Yeah, gig. No, but I think actors have a tendency to try and impress.
Yeah, that's true.
And not all of them, obviously, but I think there is a tendency to do that, and there's a tendency to be to try to be entertaining.
Uh-huh.
And she didn't have any
of
that.
Yeah, you know, like I prefer that.
She's just there's something more honest and
present.
Present and straightforward and like thoughtful because especially the kind of music she does is a singer-songwriter. She writes like poems.
I know.
Her songs are so like introspective and thoughtful.
I know
she's like, she's an interesting person to hear speak.
It's true. She was comfortable just to like let things be or like say like, I don't know, or, you know, and there's something, I find those people more engaging. Mm-hmm. You know, you're right. There's something more kind of like.
Where they're not trying.
Trying, yeah. I find myself on those podcasts and stuff trying and like being aware that like, oh, maybe I'm not so, this is not so entertaining or, right. you know, stepping it up a little bit. Like, I find myself doing that. So mm-hmm. I know that instinct. So I'm not shaming actors, or if I am, I'm shaming myself.
It makes sense because actors are bred a different way mm-hmm. than musicians. Mm-hmm. You know, the musicians, their music speaks for them.
And you,
whereas actors, I mean, obviously they play characters, but there's something about acting and breaking into the business where you have to sell yourself.
Totally. Well, that's a big part of it, because people might say, hear us and say like, well, what do you mean? I mean, both are like forms of art. One is like, both are like performing arts. One is you're on stage or you're on screen and like you do your thing. So like, why should any of this other stuff come into play? But you're right, it does. Like as an actor, you have to go on these, they call them general meetings. You have to like kind of charm people, whether it's in acting school to get in to see a certain casting director. You know, even when you go in for auditions, it's like the first few seconds or minutes are chit chat. Hey, how you doing? And like, it's an opportunity that a lot of actors take, and some like take it, you know, too much. They like overdo it with trying. I'm sure I've done that.
But you can argue that that is a huge component of the audition itself.
I think,
you know,
it
how
is.
Much they like you.
But then I hear stories about like, there are stories about actors who are just actors who are kind of like, you know, they go in and there's the famous one is Jim Caviezel when he went in for Pearl Harbor, I think, or like when Jim Caviezel first started out on the like casting circuit and he refused to do chit chat. He was just like, where do you want me? And they were like, hey, so where are you from, Jim? And he's like, right here. You ready? Am I reading with you? And like in these big rooms with like Jerry Bruckheimer and like, and he would not do that.
I bet someone like Tom Hardy would do that too.
He seems like a guy who wouldn't indulge in the chit chat. And if you're good enough, and like those guys obviously are, you don't need to do that.
It should always speak for itself, your performance.
I know,
but
I know.
I think often it isn't.
I know.
You know, it's how do you come across? Are you personable? But I think there's something interesting about that, because people who rise to the level of stardom in acting, it's not just because they're good performers or good at capturing characters. It's because there's something about them that is watchable, that people want to see.
That's true.
And I think in that little chit chat bullshit before,
maybe you can see that.
Maybe you can see how like a magnetic someone is, how their personality comes across.
Right. Like Tom,
so maybe that should be an important part of the process.
I guess it depends on what kind of part you're going for. Like a guy like Tom Hanks, I'm sure he went into some rooms and was just like, charmed the pants off of everybody. I mean, as good of an actor as he is, like I'm sure he had an opportunity to show how charming he was before he had an opportunity to show what a good actor he was. I don't know.
Well, we digress.
We digress very
Amy
much.
Amy Mann, so. But small part and pivotal part in Big Lebowski.
But so good.
She's been part of such that's probably another reason she seems so cool and confident and self-deprecating, because she surrounds herself with like such cool people, mm-hmm. you know, like the Coen brothers and Paul Thomas Anderson, and
she's in a cool
and her husband is cool. He's
and
like
cool to
a
be
Penn brother. At one point you start to sing her song to her, and I was so torn, because there was part of me that wanted you to stop because I was
cringy.
Like,
it was cringy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like the most. Yes. But then there was another part of me that was like so disappointed that you did stop,
because
it was so funny. That's rare. You
know,
when you're
is.
Like completely.
Yeah. It's extreme.
I have like passionate feelings.
Yeah.
In both directions.
Well, I'm kind of touched, because if you didn't care about me and me embarrassing myself and like how
right that's true
you
I would just
wanted
want
me
that
to,
one.
You, to keep going
that's true
so in a way it's kind of touching that there you had any instinct to for me to want to stop.
You sang like two bars and jumped ship, but it was like just enough to be like, oh God,
well, how long can you do that? I mean, I'm sure she's had that happen many times where people sing songs to her song.
You think? Many times.
Maybe not many times. Definitely not on a podcast. But definitely not a professional person.
I thought the Short Answers went well, the new Short Answers.
Yeah.
I also don't think...
Except for the toilet paper roll one.
I thought that went well, too. Really quickly, she says, I don't know.
I have no dog in this race.
But that's funny.
Yeah.
That she had a strong conviction.
Now we know that about her.
She had a strong conviction about not caring.
Do you think that that question is, does it make you immediately think of the person?
A little bit. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if a lot of people feel that way.
I wonder. It just occurred to me.
I mean, I usually don't dwell on it.
No.
I usually just get a mental.
I don't dwell on it.
Depends who the person is, I guess.
Maybe that's part of.
I think that's part of what makes it fun, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I get a flash of someone pooping.
Yeah.
And then it goes away.
Yeah, a quick flash.
Quick flash.
But I get that way a lot of times with people.
In general?
Yeah. Sometimes I imagine people it's a version of you know how they say well, if you're intimidated, it's like what we're talking about. If you're if you have stage fright, if you're intimidated,
you picture everyone in their
underwear.
Yeah.
I picture them pooping because it's the most vulnerable.
Vulnerable.
It makes them human.
Huh.
Or like animals.
Well, everybody poops.
Yeah. Everybody poops. Isn't that amazing that the most impressive.
Everybody poops sometimes. We were in a different key there.
Everybody poops.
I don't think mint chocolate chip is a controversial ice cream.
I don't either. I don't know why she said that.
In fact, I think that's
quite.
I would suspect
pedestrian.
That's in. I think that's in the top. I would suspect it's in the top 10 most popular ice cream flavors.
Top 10.
You think top 5?
Maybe top 3.
Really?
Vanilla chocolate. I think it would rival the third most common.
Oh, really? See, I think I would suspect it's vanilla chocolate, strawberry.
Strawberry?
Cookies and cream.
What?
Not for you, necessarily.
No, for one.
There's a reason that so many, those three flavors are, the three most presented flavors.
I guess so. But I think what maybe made that misleading was the Neapolitan. Whoever, that.
You think the Neapolitan is responsible for that?
Being
that many,
third.
Chains using those three ice creams? I don't know.
Maybe if you trace the history of it, that'd be interesting to trace the history of certain snack foods like that, like dessert
items. It would be.
Popular. Because I really, and when did mint chocolate chip start?
Love mint chocolate chip.
It'd be good to do a history of flavors like that.
I wonder if it's been
black
done.
Black raspberry. I wonder. We should look that up.
Speaking of having been done.
We shouldn't say it on the podcast. People might take it.
Speaking of having been done, you suggested she make a Christmas album and she was like, I did.
Oh, yeah. You know who's not going to like that is with the letter we got,
the
Newton, Mass.
Uh-huh.
Girl,
uh-huh.
Woman.
She's not going to like that.
No.
I've since listened to it on Spotify.
Oh, yeah. I heard you listen to it.
Not an ad. And it's beautiful.
Of course it is.
Don't get mad.
Well, you say that it's revelatory.
Hilarious when you ask her what name she would want to be, if not Amy. And she was like, I've always been partial to Dwight.
Dwight, that was my favorite. That single-handedly made me, I was giddy about that. That made me so
really funny.
Happy about this new question.
Yeah, this is one of your questions that you are passionate about.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I think
what name would you pick?
Well, I have Carl in my head only because.
With a C or a K?
Well, see, that's the thing. I just worked with a sound guy named Calvin, and I went up, he was 24, really nice guy. And I went up to him, and I was like, as he was doing, because you spend a lot of time with the sound people, they mic you up and stuff. And I said, Calvin, why do you keep calling me Calvin? And I kept saying it to him, and he was like, what are you doing, old man?
What are you doing, boomer?
Yeah, boomer. And I go, Calvin, you don't know, what is that from? You know that. And I kept repeating it. Poor guy. And he's like, no, I don't know. And I was like, Back to the Future. And he's like, oh, yeah. And he was sort of familiar. And I said, Calvin, that's all I think about when I think of Calvin. And he goes, Calvin Klein. And I said, I know, but that's the joke is Calvin Klein. And I said, how do you spell? He said, I spell with a K, my parents' name, with a K.
Wow.
And here's the crazier part with a K. That is, he has two siblings. One named Carl and one named Carla.
With C's?
K's.
Oh.
All that, K's.
It would be crazier if they were C's.
Yeah, I guess it would.
If they weren't consistent.
But Carl with a K?
Sure.
I guess that's kind of a Scandinavian way to do it.
Carl with a K I hear all the time.
I guess so, yeah.
In fact, I might hear Carl with a K more than Carl with a C.
What?
Yeah. How many Carls with C's do you know? Carl Wilson.
Carl Jr. Carl's sons, all those sons that he has all over the country with a K.
Carl with a K, Carl Sandburg.
Yeah. Is Carl Sammer with a K?
Yeah, I think so.
Carl Banks, C.
Yeah.
And we are boomers now. Wow. Yeah. So, but anyway, my point is, what is my point?
Calvin. Didn't know Back to the Future.
I think that's why I have Carl in my head.
But you mean Calvin?
Calvin. Yeah. Didn't know. But
so you'd be Calvin.
No, I'd be Carl because he said his brother's name is Carl. And Carl.
You started the whole story by saying, I have Calvin in my head.
But that Carl I have in my head because of the K.
I see.
IK. what would I be? I would be, I don't know. That's a tough one.
That's why it's a hard question.
I know, maybe.
Because most people, I think,
you have to think about
haven't
it.
Thought about this before.
So if a knee-jerk reaction to it, I like Dwight. Noah.
I suspect Amy Mann is going to be, in the next however long we do these questions, might be the only person moving forward who has like a very clear, very immediate response to that question. I suspect most people are going to be like, another name, huh? I haven't thought about that before.
That's true. Jack.
She had a great answer.
She did. I like Jack.
Jack?
Yeah.
Jack opens you up to a lot of teasing, I think.
Jack Long. Oh, yeah.
See?
Shit. Jake Long. Jake. I go with Jake.
That's your middle name, though. That's not very inventive.
I know. But that's what the thing. I wouldn't want it to be that different because I'm used to a certain name now.
Exactly. That's why the question is tough.
Oh, did I just talk myself out of the question? Good.
Let's read a letter.
Okay. From a little sincerity. Oh, that's nice. I like sincerity. I didn't say that very sincerely. The subject, thank you for being you. Oh, hello, Christian and Justin. My name is Victoria. I work as a graphic designer, and I am constantly looking for new music and podcasts to listen to while I work. I was lucky enough to catch Justin's interview with Jake Brennan, which led me to give Life is Short a listen. Thank you, Jake. I have to say I was surprised at how quickly I got hooked. Your brotherly banter and goofiness literally makes me laugh out loud, and I love the diverse array of guests you've had on the show so far. Oh, that is so nice to hear.
I'm making a goofy face.
Yeah, you are. It's really goofy. Christian can make a really, it's one of your great skills, I think, is the faces you're able to make.
I have a very malleable face.
Yes. I really hope you can get Alicia Keys on. She is the GOAT.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Isn't it funny that now the GOAT has become synonymous, but people are just saying that.
I hear that all the time now.
Yeah, and Jonah had that funny story about Meryl Streep.
Uh-huh.
She didn't know there was the GOAT. But people are just using that now as the word. So they're saying it out loud. It was for so long just like written. I mean, it was in like the context of...
I know, it's funny to hear it out loud because it's... Doesn't sound like a positive thing.
No, goats, I think, are really, if you really like unpack them as animals, I think they are very useful and valuable, but they're not known to be like the most impressive.
But yeah, it's not like a stallion.
Or a dolphin or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not a flattering animal comparison.
Oh, she's the goat. But she is. She's wonderful. Alicia Keys, and that'd be great to get her on. Maybe she's listening. What do you think the odds are that... Wait, how many goats are listening?
I bet there's
Tom Brady's listening.
I bet there's a 0.2% chance that Alicia Keys is listening to this.
Oh, really? 0.2?
Yeah.
That's higher than I would have thought.
Really?
Yes. But now she might be listening because if we talk about her enough, maybe a friend of hers.
Maybe it'll get picked up on BuzzFeed.
Yeah. Maybe a Keys head might.
That's true. Maybe a family member is listening.
Yeah.
I bet there's like
Jerome Keys.
I bet there's like a 12% chance that a Keys family member is listening.
12%?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of Keys out there.
Why?
Because it's a family.
You're thinking 88 Keys on a piano?
No, maybe. No, I'm thinking about our extended family. We have a lot of cousins
uncles. That's true. I think some of our...
So maybe more than 12. Maybe I'm selling a short.
You know, there might be a better
chance.
Maybe
I'm selling Life is Short.
Yeah, maybe I am by questioning.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more Keys listening than Longs.
I'm sure.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay, back to Victoria. Another person I think would be a great guest is Hinds.
Who?
In capital letters, H-I-N-D-Z. Hinds.
Hinds. Or Hinds.
Hinds. He's a super chill and insightful podcaster who focuses on mental health and spiritual growth.
Oh.
Oh, that would be great. I like those things. Definitely a vibe I think you two would resonate with. I would resonate with that vibe.
Cool.
Anywho, Oh, she has. Anywho.
She has been listening.
Yes, she has been listening. Jerry, we had a funny long conversation with Jerry the other day. We should get him. Wasn't that one of our resolutions to get Jerry on the show more
the
often?
The year is young.
I know. You don't want to do it now?
No. Okay.
That was your resolution.
But I want a plan to do it.
Oh, right, right. Anywho. Thank you so much for being awesome, funny, and genuine humans. Oh, thanks. It's funny to be thanked for being a genuine human. But I know what you mean, Victoria. I appreciate it. It's really nice. I can't wait to see what you two do in the future. Wait. If I had to choose between the Beatles or Rolling Stones, I'd pick the Stones. And she does a winky face with the tongue out. Yeah. And the... How would you say that?
The rock and roll
emoji, which I confuse sometimes with the Shaka Khan emoji.
The surfs up
emoji. Is that
emoji.
Shaka Khan or just Shaka?
Shaka.
Yeah, not Shaka Khan. That's the fan. Okay.
That's a person.
That's a person. Have a great week, Victoria. Cool. Thanks, Victoria.
Cool.
What a nice letter. I'm, of course, always slightly disappointed with the no would you rathers, but maybe we could do our own would you rather.
I like that we have a new listener, thanks to your appearance
yes.
on another podcast. I always like when that happens.
Yes. Let me ask you this. Would you rather change your name to Hins, only Hins?
Or Alicia Keys?
Or Alicia Keys.
I have to go by Alicia Keys all the time?
Yes.
Alicia Keys Long?
No, just Alicia Keys. You have to legally change your name to Alicia Keys, maybe with two S's. And Hins with an S instead of a Z. Hins.
Hey, with an S instead of a Z, so yeah. Hines?
Well, people won't
And I
know.
Don't get a last name?
No. And capital letters?
I think I would change my name to Alicia Keys. Because it would be kind of funny, and it would also... Mm-hmm. It would also...
Oh, it'd be very funny.
It would also,
Alicia
like...
Keys, if your name was Alicia Keys, it'd be so funny.
And then if you had one name, uh-huh. sort of, this is what I was trying to say before. If you had one name, that would open up a lot of annoying things in your life, I think. In
yes.
terms of filling out forms.
Right.
And
oh, man.
Think
yeah.
about all the things you fill out online where you do your first and last name. And if you don't have a last name, it'll be like, this is... You left
oh,
this
man.
Blank. I think it would open up a lot of logistical problems only having one name.
Me too. Or well, imagine having three names, like Machine Gun Kelly.
Then you could just say Machine Kelly, though. You can leave out the middle name. You know? But if your name was
Machine.
Hins, if you...
You just call me Machine.
See, I imagine Hins doesn't fill out online forms because he probably has people do that for him and stuff.
Or he uses his given. I'm sure he wasn't.
Right.
His given
that's
name
true.
Wasn't. But what is poor Elon Musk's kid poor? That's funny. It's the last time he'll ever be called poor, Elon Musk's kid. But what is that kid going to do because of his name?
That's
which is like
be,
all these different symbols. And
that is maybe the most problematic name possible.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about setting him up for like difficulties.
He'll probably have
well, people
he probably,
out.
Exact that, yeah. and he probably has a name,
a
legal name
right.
for those purposes.
I'm sure Elon Musk thought of that.
Are you?
Yeah.
Elon Musk strikes me as, though brilliant, a narcissist who isn't necessarily thinking about the travails of his offspring.
Hmm.
The future potential travails, I should say, of his offspring. Doesn't he strike you that way? Like he's really just about himself?
Yeah, but he's so smart. I would imagine that...
okay.
But I'm saying that I would imagine he might have planned for... Things like that. He might have thought through that. Like, if
I don't
you
think
have
it's
that
an,
kind of brain.
I don't think it's an intelligence issue. I think it's a selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's self-centered.
But he would have had to fill out forms for his kid, right? I mean, like, if it is that.
I'm sure he has people doing all that. He doesn't fill out forms, Elon Musk.
When he travels and stuff?
Are we talking about the same Elon Musk?
Well, what about when he travels? Oh, I guess he flies privately.
Of course.
Right, right.
He's got like $100 billion.
Yeah, right. He doesn't fly on Delta. Yeah. Shout out to Delta.
He flies with his jetpack.
You're right. You're right.
He's like Tony Stark.
Yes, that's true. Anyway, well, maybe future guest of the show.
Hopefully he doesn't listen.
Yeah, I think he likes doing podcasts and stuff.
Well, that'd be great.
Yeah. So, anyway, if you're a Musk, if you're in the Musk family or the Keys family, please pass along the invitation.
Yeah, and hit us up. lifeisshort@wondery.com.
Yes, and thank you, Victoria, for your letter and for all the kind words. And
Amy Mann.
Yeah, man.
For your years of awesome music.
Yeah, truly. I'm really glad I got to thank her for that. It's one of the reasons I love doing the show. Like, people I admire like that, getting to personally thank them.
Check out Amy Mann's, all her work, and Magnolia, if you haven't seen it. But her latest album is called Queens of the Summer Hotel.
Yas Queens of the Summer Hotel.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and see you next week. Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long. It is co-hosted, and you also have a producer vibe to you.
Christian Long.
Another producer we have is Katie.
The.
Alan and.
Megan. The.
Monaco and.
Senior producer is Michelle.
Mish.
Lands.
And the audio engineer is the.
Sergio Enriquez.
And the executive producer vibes on this one provided by.
Marshall Louis.
For a company.
Wondery.
I know. That's why, probably like why he likes her. You know why?
You need to go like that.
I didn't realize it. I didn't put it together.
Why do girls pose like that at the end?
Pose
in
the
boobs out and their butt out. Like, makes their waist look smaller.
Oh, someone's doing that right now?
Yeah, the end.
Can I look?
Yeah.
Oh.
It makes their waist look smaller and the boobs out and their butt goes back.
Whoa.
Oh. It's a good angle.
Oh. I didn't know you knew.
Oh, that's
I've thought
point.
About that.
That's
before.
A good point.
That's true. You're right. It does all those things.
All those things.
But doesn't it look forced? But they'd rather.
Yeah,
but they'll make that sacrifice in order to accentuate their body.
Is he right?
It does do that. There are better ways to do it. That is one of.
They're taking so many.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments. But business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.